Kelly Klein, your host for Streetwise Spirituality. Our topic here is life, and nothing is off the table, not arguments, heartbreak, or disappointment. We'll work together here to get a handle on all the stuff that stirs us up and spits us out. Maybe down deep you think, my job determines my value. I'm only as good as I look. I'll be safe if I keep on smiling. Or that old favorite, security is a warm partner. Or maybe you keep chasing perfection, judging others and yourself, wondering why life hurts so much. Stay with me as we bring a spiritual perspective down to earth on Streetwise Spirituality for Contact Talk Radio. Benig Moje is an unusually heart-centered person. She's a Jungian psychotherapist and spiritual seeker with an international following. Most, if not all of us, have known what it is to be wounded in love. Many of us then spend days, weeks, and sometimes years blaming a former partner as quite possibly the worst human being ever to walk this planet. In time, we fall in love again. Again, we choose a person who breaks our heart. And again, sadly, something happens, and it's all over. And we tell ourselves that the last one we loved and lost was an angel compared to this truly cruel and heartless person. And so it goes. Love and learn, they say. Many of us, including myself, spend too many years loving and learning little from the process. Tonight, we'll spend an hour with Benig Moje, who wrote the book Love in a Time of Broken Heart, Healing from Within. An exploration of most of the questions we have about love, including what happens when love breaks down, how we can heal heartbreak, how childhood influences the choice of an intimate partner, how a love wound can lead to greater, deeper explorations and understanding of ourselves, and how such an experience can draw us toward soul growth. Thank you for coming on the show, Benig.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Good. Tell me first, how did you come up with the title of your book?
Well, the subtitle came to me very late in the whole process. But the first title, it was something that was with me for a while because I had learned on my journey that the most difficult thing for us to do as human beings, it seems, is to be able to keep our hearts open and to love when we're not feeling good, if you like, or if we have suffered heartbreak or if we're depressed or something like this. So I thought about Love in a Time of Cholera and all these other books, and what came to me was really Love in a Time of Broken Heart. It just made sense.
Yes, it does. In the book you write, I was taken on a spiritual journey to chart the course of the human heart and how we seek and encounter the divine in our lives through our relationships. How did you begin, and what was your compass in charting the human heart?
My compass was really my own journey. I'm a therapist, as you know, and I would have been listening to heartbreak, stories of heartbreak for over 20 years. But it really wasn't until I experienced it most profoundly myself that that the experience of heartbreak, if we allow ourselves to live it, can take us right into our souls and right into our inner selves, so that at some level inside there we connect with our own journey to the divine. Because I think that love, in a sense, is both human and divine passion. And, you know, the poetry and the writings of the mystics speak about this. And I was very informed by the poetry of Rumi, for example, Rilke, Teresa of Avila, John of the Cross. They write about this search for wholeness. In their sense, it was union with God. For us, it's union with another human being. But it's the same search for wholeness.
Yes, indeed. Would you talk about the middle ground you walk between traditional psychotherapy and approaches considered somewhat more spiritual.
Yeah, I will talk about that, because in a way, that is somewhere where I feel we need, as human beings, if you like, but in my profession, that we need to walk more towards. My training was in traditional psychoanalytic psychotherapy, so the psychology looking at early life and the impact of early life on our lives, to help us understand the human psyche. But having said that, as a Jungian, meaning follower of C.G. Jung, the only reason to go back, if you like, is to move forward. So that the spiritual element of the work is what actually brings about transformation. Because you can know that you were an abandoned child or that you suffered in childhood, but that's not enough. You have to somehow learn from it and move forward. And so the spiritual side of it, it helps us, for sure, because it's the sense of where we're going and how we can grow from our wounds as opposed to remaining stuck in them.
Yes, and you mentioned the necessity of embracing the shadow wound. You said we cannot allow ourselves to get bogged down in the narcissism of woundology or swept off by mysticism that promises healing without struggle. I think that's so important. Would you talk a little about that?
It is, and that's where the middle ground is, which is the ground of the soul, the terrain of the soul, because we can remain stuck in our wounds, and that brings about a kind of victim mentality. Now, I think that part of this is back to the consciousness of wounds. I mean, the consciousness which came through in the 60s and 70s of people beginning to understand that they had been wounded and be able to express it and to understand the nature of the unconscious and how it, it informs us. But if there's a certain, I think has been a, the problem has been that there's been a certain type of narcissistic element to this wound consciousness, if you like. So it's tied up with a personal sense of entitlement. I want this, I need this, I should have this. Rather than a piece of compassion and open-heartedness and an embracing of our human natures. And the other side, so that, as I said earlier, one can remain stuck in the wounds and think, okay, well, I was hurt in childhood, I was abandoned, or I was the child of alcoholic parents, therefore I'm the way I am, and that's it. The spiritual side of it, we have to be careful not to get sometimes swept away by a sense of the angels will heal it all, God will take it all away, because, yes, we need to connect on a spiritual level, but we always need to be the mediator for that, so that we're working through our own soul, if you like, and we do have to be able to endure. You know, Carol, one of the things that, as a therapist, always makes me smile, but I remember because I was also in therapy, obviously, for a long time. Sometimes people, when they come, we want the therapist to wave a magic wand and say, all gone, nasty mommy and daddy, all gone, wounds. You know, we want this magic stuff.
Yes.
But in a way, we have to be able to work through it. We have to be able to have the ability to suffer and endure.
Right. No one else can do it for us.
No one else can do it for us, but so that we know that we're on a journey and that there are gifts to these wounds. And I don't think I'd be here today if I didn't have that philosophy that all our difficult experiences are a learning and a growth making. They're growth making.
Absolutely. Another point you made in your book, you said having a broken heart can be a necessary sacred initiation into divine or unconditional love. A love wound can become an opening to unconditional love and the transformation of consciousness. And I was thinking, we don't remember particulars around many of our difficult experiences, but we sometimes wonder if we will survive heartbreak. And you say it's a good thing. Can you share more of what you mean?
Yeah, I say it's a good thing because, what I mean is that, when we're heartbroken, we are thrown back on ourselves. and the person we love or whatever has left us, or we have left them, whatever it is, and it throws us into our own selves so that we learn to connect with our own hearts. And in the book, I write a lot about my own journey through heartbreak, of course,
yes,
and how I went to Arizona and spent some time in the wonderful desert there, which is a place of openness and essence, so that you can connect with yourself. There's no distractions, there's no one else there. And I what it did, it's an opening kind of on the level of the heart chakra in terms of openness to compassion, to unconditional love, to what love really is and what it's meant to be. Of course, we're always struggling as human beings to marry conditional love with unconditional love, and sometimes we can love unconditionally as we do our children, but in relationships, generally speaking, we fall into the, well, I love you if you love me back. Or
yes, I love you, but.
Yeah, but, you know, if only you would listen to me or do this or do that. So that experience, as an experience, there are other life experiences that throws us, I think, into being able to connect with heartbreak, with unconditional love. And that, you know, sometimes life-changing illnesses or life-changing experiences can actually throw people deeply into the spiritual.
Yes, very true.
Yeah, and so I feel that it's just one of those times when you really can connect with your purpose on the planet, with your journey, with your specific journey.
Yes. You said also all growth demands a sacrifice. Suffering the pain of heartbreak can open our hearts and take us deeper into our souls. It is through life crises and traumatic experiences that many of us are called to listen to our souls and find the deeper meaning of our lives. So in a sense, we should actually celebrate when things go wrong in love.
Well, at some level, we should celebrate eventually. I think we wouldn't be human if we didn't in the beginning rant and rave and go bananas.
Right.
Because in a way, it's a process. And grieving is a process, and we do need to express all the feelings associated with it and not repress them. And do you know what I'm saying?
Like, yes.
And it does go in phases. You know, we might be numb. I mean, I remember for me, like, in the beginning, it was a sort of sense of, waking up in the morning and sort of the reality of the situation would crash down on you like a ton of bricks, and then you'd connect somehow with yourself and the day would get a little bit better, and then you might revert back. And each day that passes, you're somehow moving, if you're enduring it. But you see, because we find suffering difficult, and that's one of the things I think I talk about in the book, is that our modern way of life is somewhat fragmented, so that I'm wondering, have we lost the capacity to endure suffering?
Mm-hmm.
We tend to want to go to the doctor or to the shrink or whoever it is to get sorted very quickly, when in reality the sorting will go on by nature, in its own nature. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, we want the quick fix, but there is no quick fix when it comes to the heart.
There is no quick fix. Absolutely, there is no quick fix, and it's a question of staying with it and being with ourselves. And I think if you were to ask me, like, what advice to give people or anything, it's turning inwards. It's doing what makes your heart sing, or what is expressing what's in your heart. Walking in nature, I find nature hugely healing.
I do too.
And walking in nature, and you see, nature brings us back to the constancy of our lives. And to, I live by the sea in the west of Ireland, and it's my soul home. And when I go back there, everything that's inside me and jumbled up starts to lie down and be quiet when I listen to the sea, because I see that nature constantly renews itself. So it reminds us that we constantly also renew ourselves in some way, even our hearts.
Indeed. Thank you so much, Benig. It's break time. We're going to take a breather for a minute or two. Be right back with Benig Moshe, author of Love in a Time of Broken Heart, Healing from Within. I'm Carol Marley Klein. You're listening to Streetwise Spirituality on Contact Talk Radio.
you know that you can rate this show on iTunes? The show you're listening to right now. It's true. You can leave your thoughts about the show, the topic, the guest. You can even leave a suggestion. Then, before you leave, rate the show. The hosts love hearing from you, so next time you download this show from iTunes, leave your thoughts and rate the show for the host and for others.
Want to know where the hotspot for interaction with your community is? It's at the new Contact Talk Radio Hotspot. The CTR Hotspot is an online interactive community and social media outlet where you can read articles, post blogs, watch videos, and communicate with other like-minded individuals. Go to www.ctrhotspot.com and see what it's all about. Create a profile and start interacting with your community today. That's www.ctrhotspot.com. Ever wonder what it's all about? Ever wish you'd been born with an owner's manual? Create a life rich with meaning. Connect with power, courage, love, and your innermost self. Order Streetwise Spirituality, 28 Days to Inner Fitness and Everyday Enlightenment at www.streetwisespirituality.info or call toll-free 1-888-558-4354, extension 1. That's 1-888-558-4354, extension 1. Light up your life with Streetwise Spirituality.
Check out Carol Marley Klein's website to learn about her book, Streetwise Spirituality, 28 Days to Inner Fitness and Everyday Enlightenment. Sign up for her newsletter, read portions of her book, click on the daily meditation, and dive into a month's worth of intentions. Find out how to create a streetwise kind of spirituality and more. For more information, go to www.streetwisespirituality.org and enjoy.
Welcome back. I'm Carol Marley Klein, host of Streetwise Spirituality for Contact Talk Radio. And we're talking with Jungian psychotherapist Benig Moshe about her book, Love in a Time of Broken Heart. Benig, you say the devastation of heartbreak leads us to mistrust love and wall ourselves off or continue the search without the skills to choose well. What other way is there?
I think that if we utilize, if I understood your question correctly, if we use well our experience of heartbreak and go on an inner journey where we begin to look at what has brought this about. In other words, we begin to look at what our own inner forces are and how we relate. We might get to grips with what our patterns are in relating. And then as we become conscious of those, we then have a choice so that we begin to draw into our lives. Once we heal that, we begin to draw into our lives a different kind of relationship. I'm not saying that every experience of heartbreak is because you have chosen badly, because at a spiritual level, you've chosen right.
Yes.
You were meant to have that experience in some way to bring about some growth in you.
Right. I think one of the things you're saying here is that it's very important for us to look inside ourselves as to why some of the things happened, instead of just looking at the other person and saying, well, you did this and you did that and you didn't do the other thing.
Exactly. And if we do that too much, we never become conscious. We are in the position of blaming the other. We're not doing the second part of the book, which we're not doing the healing.
Right.
Because we can't heal from something we're not aware, we don't know, if you like. So until we begin to look at our own patterns, and the other thing I think is really important to remember, and it's something I remind myself about every time I get into a kind of a flap, is the outer is a reflection of the inner. So if we are seeing in somebody else or projecting something into something else, or that's attracting men over and over who can't make a commitment, just to take that one, then we need to go inside and find out and ask ourselves, where am I not able to make a commitment?
Mm-hmm.
That I'm projecting and choosing men who can't make a commitment. In other words, if we take everything within and ask ourselves the question, we're then in a position to be able to heal somehow and change the situation.
Yes, very good points. You also said when we form relationships with our heart centers closed, we operate from lower energy centers. Relationships will be based less on a love ideal, more on things like sex, money, emotional and material security, or power. Such relationships function, but they fail because they don't make us happy. Would you talk about that?
Most of us we're human beings, so we're driven by need, sexuality, companionship, power and money, and to have a good, stable situation. But I think that as we move, and to a certain extent, there's a life cycle, because even Jung talks about individuation, which is the coming into wholeness, and the first part of our life is supposed to be dedicated, if you like, to ego consciousness, to becoming independent from our parents, leaving school, to go and get married, and to get a job and have a family. And the second part of life, which he says starts in the 30s, is more about self-reflection and working out what matters and who we are, who our individual selves, who we are individually, and move away towards our own path, if you like. So I think that we get caught up in relationships which don't really connect with our hearts necessarily. But when we... You see, this is where the whole thing is so interesting, because when we do fall in love, love always mends the separated part of man. Every love affair holds a vision of wholeness. So it takes out of these other areas, if you know what I mean, just sex or whatever the thing might be. It takes us into something much more pure and much more connected with the divine. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, I love that perspective.
Yeah, and the thing is that we all fall in love, I mean, even when we're 16, 17, and there's a great purity in that love. However, often, and this is the sadness, and it's the sadness I find in Ireland and in anywhere else, that increasingly there is a divorce between love and sex, for young people. So it's like what happens to the heart, it gets confused. It learns, what does it learn? It learns some kind of lesson that is love possible? Is love, you know, because there's nothing more beautiful than seeing a little kid in love. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yes.
If it's so pure. And when we fall in love as well, at some level, an element of that is always beautiful. And when I'm working with clients who, come in for relationship problems, and obviously there are situations where you know that person is in completely the wrong relationship and you'd wish to get rid of that person and this is just not right for them or the community. But the thing is, it's no good working that way. I would ask, okay, well, tell me what you love about him. So then you get a sense of where the person's soul is, what it is they're loving, what it is they're needing to connect within themselves. That's the pure side of love, if you like. It's the soul element.
Right.
I know I've gone on a bit, probably away from the question.
Oh, no. I'm enjoying listening to you. I had another question. You were talking about fantasy and reality. And when it comes to love, why do we choose fantasy over reality? Why can't we just simply see it as it is?
I think that we have to see the fantasy a little bit, because otherwise we wouldn't go for it, probably.
Yes.
So, I mean, I'm sure you've experienced this as I have. You know that you fall in love, you have a relationship, you break up, and you move on, or you grow up, you move on to another, and you look back and you say, "What on earth did I see in that person?" And it's because we're seeing everything our soul wants. We're seeing everything that our soul needs and what we've projected that into that person. And of course, they may hold some of that energy, but deep down, they are also themselves with all the flaws that they have. And it's the same for people when they fall in love with us. We're a great goddess or, you know, the most wonderful woman. But then when you find out the person is bad-tempered or smells or whatever it is, it's just a normal human being, then the task for us is we take off the rose-tinted glasses and we have to start to relate to the person as a human being.
Yes.
So I think that the fantasy element is really important because, in a sense, it's about life also. It gets us to somehow have that enthusiasm and have the whole spirit. Don't you think that fantasy in a way is connected with our soul and our spirit?
I hadn't thought of it that way, but that's worth sitting with and thinking about. Definitely.
Yeah, I'm thinking about it as we speak. It's what comes through for me, but I know that love, being in love, is connected a little bit with fantasy. And the reality is there too, but it comes in later. And our task is to be able to live with the reality and know that person, there's still beauty there, even though the reality is... So our task, in a way, is to be able to marry the fantasy with the reality. And know that human being and has all these faults. You can love them for that also.
Yes. I remember hearing somewhere, in love, a perfect memory is absolutely unforgivable.
A perfect memory is unforgivable.
In love.
Yes.
Perhaps.
Yes.
There's another point you made in your book, Love in a Time of Broken Heart. You said, emotional loneliness is mirrored back to us in the world. How do we experience this, and why are we so devastated by our loneliness?
I think there are several things about that. I think that as we have developed over centuries, for a great many reasons, we have somehow become disconnected from our nature, disconnected from our spiritual side, disconnected. I mean, Jung wrote way back in the beginning of the, in the 1920s, around that, man was in search of his soul. And it's really that we're looking for some kind of inner wholeness that we do no longer find in the world out there unless we make an effort. Like traditional societies, people who live much closer to nature or who have some kind of sense of meaning in their lives or of their place in the scheme of things, can somehow live with that. And even in where I come from in Connemara, in the very rural part of the west of Ireland, you still feel people who feel that the world is okay, you know, because they're living close to nature and they seem to have some sense of the rightness of things. But I think that we've developed so much that the world has become, you know, almost technological, and we can have anything we want when we want it. We can talk to, except the one thing money can't buy, which is happiness.
Yes.
And we can cross geographical boundaries instantly by speaking to people on the internet, but we've still been so lonely because it's a disembodied connection.
Very true.
So I just think that also the whole consumer quick fix mentality society has taught us somehow that, or maybe has eroded within us, the ability to wait and to be and to endure. You know, we want things right away, and if we don't get them right away, we're frustrated. We can't be with that emptiness. You know?
Right. No, you're absolutely right. Another thing that you went into in the book was intimacy. Can you talk about what is healthy and unhealthy intimacy? Maybe the independent person, the emotionally open person, that kind of thing.
Yeah. I don't know specifically which part of the book you're referring to, but in terms of healthy and unhealthy intimacy, very few of us, I find, very few of us have grow up with a perfect template of healthy intimacy, because it's based how we relate in life, in an intimate relationship. The template for that is laid down before birth and at birth and in early life. So our first relationship, what we need to remember is our first relationship is with our mothers. So if we've experienced a difficult birth, you know, my work also goes into the pre and perinatal area of life.
Yes.
My first books were about that. Or if we have been separated from mothers, or we haven't experienced our fathers as being intimately connected with our mothers, present in our lives, then we form attachment patterns. And therefore, when we come into having intimate relationships, those patterns will be re-experienced again, or will be relived. So just to give you an example, if we have a fear of abandonment, which is the one I'm most familiar with and the one I write about, if we have a fear of abandonment, we won't necessarily know we have it, but unconsciously we have a fear of abandonment. We would choose somebody who at some level is destined to abandon us or betray us.
Yes.
Why do we do that? Because our souls arrange it so that at some level we can learn to deal with that first wound and not abandon ourselves. The soul has a way of working out its map within us, its pattern within us, to help us to grow. So to go back to what you said about unhealthy intimacy, so that situation in which there is a partnership, there's a kind of currency that goes on. It could be the man or it could be the woman, but say it's the woman who has a fear of being left alone or abandoned. Then she may prostitute herself. I don't mean physically, I mean emotionally. In other words, stay in a relationship or placate, stay in a bad relationship for fear of being alone.
Yes. I've seen that. Very much so.
Are you still there?
Yes, I'm here, listening.
Yeah. No. And no, because I thought you were gone for a minute.
No.
And then healthy intimacy is more, and let me just be straight up here. None of us are ever perfect either, and none of us, I believe, can achieve completely healthy intimacy, but at least we work towards it. But a healthy one is when we are more self-aware and we know our patterns and we also the other person for their uniqueness.
Yes, right.
And Rilke, one of my favorite poets, he talks about this somewhere, and he says love is really, and I haven't got the quote in front of me, unfortunately, but it's really about being able to stand sentinel or stand guard on the individuality of the other person. So you allow each person to be themselves. And, you know, that's quite hard.
It's hard, but it's really the only way.
It is the only way, I think, to really have good and harmonious relationships. And it's not necessarily easy, but it's healthy.
It's not easy. Not easy, but, as you say, very healthy. And it works. It makes it possible to continue.
I think so.
Yes.
I think so.
You also said healing the heart and learning to trust again is as vital to your soul as food is to your body. Love and a sense of inner wholeness are vital to our spiritual well-being. When we cease to love, we cease to live, because love is part of our souls. I just love that. That is so beautiful, so
yeah,
well stated.
I know. Well, it's a while since I wrote the book, but that's it. And I think that's right, exactly, because in a sense, when I was writing the book, and obviously in my own life and in my own training and my work as a therapist, I know how much a sense of inner wholeness is so vital to our souls. Because if we feel disconnected or out of balance, as the Eastern, as some of the medical of the work over there talk, they always talk about us being out of balance, then we suffer. We suffer because we're not in harmony. So in a sense, our task is even to somehow connect to both our divine and our, to make friends, to marry our divine and our human nature, together so that we can live with ourselves in harmony. And I think that in practical sense, what it means is that, and I remember when it happened with me, in a practical sense, it's about when we actually, and I know it sounds corny, but it's true, when we learn to accept and actually love ourselves. And I don't mean love in a narcissistic way.
Right.
I mean to accept, you know what, you're okay. You're struggling, you're hurt, and you have a little girl inside you that's crying out occasionally, but that's okay. I look after you. Don't worry about it. You're all right. You're as good or as you're okay to me. Do you know what I mean?
I do, so, indeed.
Yeah. So in a sense, if we, and that's another thing I discovered when I was writing the book, that people were, you know, people come in and they're saying, oh, you know, I can't find the right relationship, and most of the problems are to do with love, and why can't I be happy with love, or you know, nobody's, I can't find anyone. I mean, the bottom line is, I would say, well, how much can you love? You see, a lot of us, and it was a shock to me really when I was writing this book and I went into the depth in that way when I actually was researching it and went away to write the book. A lot of us are fearful or not actually able to accept. We feel ourselves at some level maybe to be unworthy of love. So if someone tells us they love us, sometimes we don't actually really believe that.
Very true. At this point, we're going to take another brief break. When we come back, we'll learn more about love from Benny Moshe, author of Love in a Time of Broken Heart. I'm Carol Marley Klein. This is Streetwise Spirituality on Contact Talk Radio.
Check out Carol Marley Klein's website to learn about her book, Streetwise Spirituality, 28 Days to Inner Fitness and Everyday Enlightenment. Sign up for her newsletter, read portions of her book, click on the daily meditation, and dive into a month's worth of intentions. Find out how to create a streetwise kind of spirituality and more. For more information, go to www.streetwisespirituality.org and enjoy.
Did you know that you can rate this show on iTunes? The show you're listening to right now. It's true. You can leave your thoughts about the show, the topic, the guest. You can even leave a suggestion. Then, before you leave, rate the show. The hosts love hearing from you, so next time you download this show from iTunes, leave your thoughts and rate the show for the host and for others.
Are you good at finding a point of peace in your life? Until crazy traffic wrecks your plans, until your spouse or significant other makes you mad, or until the world slips out from under your feet. If life always seems to get between you and your spirituality, order your copy of Streetwise Spirituality, 28 Days to Inner Fitness and Everyday Enlightenment by Carol Marley Klein. Discover how to turn your challenges into spiritual gold mines. Find peace and understanding in the midst of pain, disappointment, or heartbreak. Go to www.streetwisespirituality.org. That's streetwisespirituality.org. Discover that balance between what others expect from you and who you really are with a streetwise kind of spirituality.
This is ContactTalkRadio.com, making contact with what matters to you.
Hello again, I'm Carol Marley Klein on Streetwise Spirituality for Contact Talk Radio. We have with us Benny Moshe, who wrote Love in a Time of Broken Heart, Healing from Within. Benny, in reading your book, I ran across yet another quote. It says, "It is in the heart that our human and divine natures meet. Our hearts are the messengers of our spirits. So listening to heart connects us with our soul and our life's purpose." How do we hear our hearts?
I think that we don't often hear them. And that's the problem, that we hear them when they're broken. Sometimes it's the first time maybe that we realize that, I don't mean to be facetious, but that we realize that we have a heart. In other words, when we are beginning to hurt that way, and that's where love is such an amazing, you know, it's so important that we, at some level, are able to love, are able to, are not frozen. You know, in my workshops, I do work with this a lot, and, you know, the common thing with people is, I don't know how to open my heart. If they're very wounded, they're closed down. So I always say, you know, I help to give some ideas about how we can work with that. But the bottom line is we don't often listen to our hearts because we're taught at school and as we grow up very much not to listen to, because our hearts are also connected a little bit to intuition. So we have a feeling about something. But we're sort of taught to go into the head a lot, especially in Western culture.
Oh, yes.
So, no, just take it into your head. Just work it through and talk about it. But there is absolutely nothing logical about the heart. We cannot, neither is there anything logical about the soul. I mean, take dreams. We work, as therapists, I work with dreams a lot, with clients. But you cannot interpret a dream according to logical lines. It's symbolic language. It's the language of the soul. Well, the heart is connected with that because, you know, your daughter or my daughter could be out there and fall in love with the most horrible creature that we think, what on earth is going on here? But the thing is, the heart doesn't. Her heart is operating on a different level. So she's connecting in with something from her soul, which is saying, man or this person has all these things that I want, that I need. Do you know what I mean?
Right, yes.
So often we don't listen to our hearts. We're taught to go into the head. And I just want to share this with you briefly. It would be helpful. Last year, I had already published this book, but I had a huge experience again of heartbreak because a man I love very much died very suddenly. I had been with him a long time. We weren't together when he died, but he died very suddenly. And I was suddenly plunged back into the old heartbreak again. Mm-hmm. And I went to Mexico to do some training in shamanism and traditional medicine there. And, of course, I was shut down and hurt and exhausted. And when I got there, the healers took me aside very quickly and said, you need to begin to go into your heart. I said, I'm there. What do you mean? I know all about the heart. No, you're not. You're in your head. So you're trying to deal with it through your head.
Yes.
So they took me through a series of treatments or experiences, healing basically, where I just actually cried and grieved and cried and grieved and all the old things that you don't allow yourself to do, you know. I mean,
right.
It just happened, and I really realized how much, even though we think we're in our hearts, a lot of the time we get out of it quickly because it's kind of what we know.
Yes, yes, you're absolutely right. Another thing you mentioned was that the first key to healing is understanding that it lies within you, and basic to the inner journey is acceptance, learning to be with what is, and enduring the battlegrounds of the heart. That I found really, really interesting to think about. Do you want to expand a little bit on the battlegrounds of the heart?
Yeah, well, it's interesting you should mention that because your very first question to me was, how did I come across the title of the book? And actually, this brings me to the battlegrounds of the heart because I had a dream when the book was gestating in me and I was beginning to think about writing it. I actually had a dream in which the dream said, write about the battlegrounds of the heart.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it said. So next morning, I sat at my computer and put chapter whatever, battlegrounds of the heart, and I waited, and I waited, and nothing happened, and I waited. And I realized I had to actually just go with, I started writing then about how conflicted we are, about my own heart and about my confusion. And that often we're conflicted, you see, and it's part of our nature. So we love and we don't love, and we think, well, what, So we're trying to work it all out. And so Battlegrounds of the Heart was something that came to me in a dream, and I just thought that it's helpful sometimes if we can know that everybody has that battleground. Heart in itself is a beautiful thing, but it often struggles. We struggle. We want the answers to things we don't have. We want solutions to things that are not there yet. And sometimes, you know, we have to get out of our own way in order to allow life to come through.
Yes.
I think that and the heart, if we listen to it and just let it be. Like, you know, I think that day and the next day, I wrote stuff and then I crossed. I don't know whether you remember that bit in the book. I wrote stuff and then I crossed it out next day and said, what on earth is this? I can't put that in. You know, I was all confused. Mm-hmm. And then finally, I just sort of let go. And when I let go, you know, stuff started coming through much more easily.
Right.
So I can't remember what you actually asked me.
We were talking about enduring the battlegrounds of the heart.
Yeah.
Learning to be what is.
Yeah, and exactly. And you know, I remember also going to see my therapist and also some healers. And, you know, well, I mean, what about this? But just be with what is for now.
Mm.
What is beautiful.
Yes.
There's beauty in the what is. There's beauty in, and then the other one is the endurance. And there is great beauty in endurance and knowing that all is in order. At some level, all is in order.
Right.
And that, I think, must sustain us in difficult times.
Indeed.
You know, because if not, where do we go? You know, I don't think I'd be here today if I hadn't said to myself at some level, all is in order. There's something here for me to learn from, and it will come through in time.
I believe that completely.
Yeah, and it's easier said than done, as we both know.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. You also mentioned the need to love is basic to the human heart, but there's always a conflict between loving ourselves and loving others, because the ego engages in conflict, and loving someone means being aware of another's needs and desires, and reconciling these with our own needs is not easy. Many people fear the everyday compromises needed in a relationship, but such conflict must be faced head-on for it to pass and resolve itself in a meaningful way. I find that such an important point for us to know about the battlegrounds of the heart.
Yeah. The sound cut out at the very end of that, but I think what you're pointing to is that we, at some level, have to understand that the connection with the other, the love that we feel, the connection with the other person, and also the vow that we make. By that I mean that loving and relationship involves at some level a commitment to the other and to how the other is. And so it takes us outside of ourselves. Yes, we have to be ourselves in relationship, and that's what's hard, because we want to be ourselves in relationship, but also respect the other. And that can be difficult because, you know, if you have a situation where, you love someone else, but they're doing something which bothers you,
mm-hmm.
you have to at some level work out, you know, some modus vivendi where you can both live with that.
One of the points you made was something that took me years to learn. You said we need to be comfortable alone and whole in our aloneness to live in healthy relationships. Can you comment on that, please?
Yeah, I think that's a huge thing. I really do, because it's something I find a lot in my work, and that we work on in the workshop quite a bit, is that, and I experienced it myself, that at some level, until we spend, I feel, some time alone where we are connecting with who we are, with our inner lover, if you like, with how our heart is. I mean, I learned so much about myself through my experience of heartbreak and when I went into the desert and went into exile, if you like, myself. But until we do that, we're kind of mindlessly just repeating things, and we're not aware. And while we're not aware, we don't have a choice so much in how we're relating.
Very true.
So, So spending time alone can bring us back to ourselves and connect with our hearts and with our souls and with what our journey is. You know, sometimes we lose our way, that's okay, but how do we find our way back? Usually by sitting still.
Right.
And in the moment of stillness, something comes in. And I just want to share this with you, but again, it was in the book, but I think it will help us to understand. I remember one such occasion when, you know, you're trying to work something out with somebody and you're sitting up and you're not sitting up to discuss it and all of this. Well, I remember when the pivotal relationship was breaking up for me, or I saw that we were, you know, both of us were suffering and we were meeting and trying to talk, and it was all difficult. And I remember sitting at the dinner table with Tony, his name was, and I stopped talking, and then he stopped talking, and there was a moment of silence between us. And in that moment was the seeds of our future. We both knew that our relationship had to end. We just hadn't allowed it to come in. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So it's in the moment of stillness in our lives, in a situation like that, that we come back to ourselves. Now, neither of us wanted the relationship to end, but both of us knew we could grow in it as it was.
Right.
And sometimes that's incredibly painful, but the still moment will give us the answer, often.
There was another point you made, which was, compassion is where our heart pain is meant to lead us. The call to unconditional love is an integral part of an evolving collective consciousness whose time has come. Answering the call demands we embrace our humanity, our emotional wounds, and our vulnerability. Connecting with other people is an essential aspect of how we live our lives as we engage consciously. If we are unconscious, we project everything onto the other and learn absolutely nothing. And I'm so sorry, but we are out of time. So I want to thank you, Benning Moshe, who wrote Love in a Time of Broken Heart, Healing from Within, for being with us tonight. Check out Benning's website at www.soul-connections.com. That's www.soul-connections.com. You can find information there about her workshops and how to buy the book. Next week, I'll interview Ditte Oliker, clinical psychologist whose personal tragedy turned her life around. That tragedy made her leave a highly successful theater career in Los Angeles. She went back to school and got a PhD in psychology, in large part so she could understand why adults hurt themselves and others. We'll look at the roots of childhood wounds and healing. I look forward to being with you again next week. Thanks for listening. Until next time, make more sense out of life with a spiritual perspective. There's good work to be done, and you're the one to do it. I'm Carol Marley Klein for Streetwise Spirituality at Contact Talk Radio.